listening to Knots Alive from Asteroid G, getting replaced by a new actor and no one decides to comment on it. I'm your host, Mike Finkelstein.
Hey everybody, Mike the Ghoul here, not being replaced by a body double or just someone else. Like, that was good. That was good. You caught me a little off guard with that one.
We are discussing the sixth James Bond movie, On Her Majesty's Secret Service, which is the start and the end of the George Lazenby era.
quite the epic, but like, at least he got his money worth, man. This is a long movie.
It is. Yeah, he comes in and he does a very long movie, but I personally think a good one. Apparently you and I are going to have some words on that discussion. But yes, this is a different kind of James Bond from anything that you got during the Connery era, which I get it. A lot of fans hate this movie because Lazenby only showed up for one film, because he doesn't play the part the way Connery does, because his story is very different. There's a number of reasons that we're going to go over time. But long and short of it is that he's a very different Bond from Connery, and then Connery immediately comes back afterwards to do one more film in the series. And so Lazenby just kind of sticks out like a sore thumb. He could be from a different franchise, practically.
It's almost like the name itself kind of sounds like it doesn't belong in the first eight Bond films as it is. So, like, it kind of, maybe in retrospect, like, that's a good homage to the one and only Lazenby that we got there. Because, like, I mean, it should kind of, like, be its own thing. Because, to your point, it's not, it doesn't feel like what we got before, and it feels nothing like what we got after. It's very different.
It is.
And it's a good story, though. Like, we're going to disagree a little bit. I was very bored in the beginning compared to like what I had expected it to be. But then it started to grab me around the middle. And the third act of this movie is great. And the fight scene at the end, like, I feel like we finally got a proper Bond fight. Like, I liked the one between Connery and Robert Shaw. That was a good fight, I think, as well. But this one took it to another level when we get there. I had a lot of fun with that. But it was a movie that, like, stands alone, to your point. And it should, I think, in a way. And as a Bond fan, I remember not liking this. But, like, as I've watch it again, I think I respect it a little bit more for what it is compared to, like, you know, what I thought it was back then.
We want to take just a brief moment to thank our sponsors for this week. When you look towards the future, what do you imagine? Children playing, people happy, cities stretching for miles, and civilization heading into a new golden age. But the only way to get to the future is with the technology of today. Cyberdyne Systems has the technology to get us there. As AI has risen, Cyberdyne has been on the forefront of its development. We've been years ahead of the competition, and we plan to stay there through the power of our proprietary AI, Skynet. For your prosperity, for your safety, for your better tomorrow, put your trust in the watchful eye of Cyberdyne's Skynet system. You won't regret it. Cyberdyne Systems, the future is bright. And thank you to our sponsors. This movie is almost like a self-contained single episode that you can almost extract from the whole franchise, and it just kind of sits alone on its own. Which, for better and worse, I think makes it at least an interesting footnote, even if it's not one that all the fans like. Bond is introduced just kind of tooling around in his car. He meets a girl on a beach who seems like she's going to kill herself. Gets attacked by random guys, I think, who were there to kidnap her, because they don't seem to care about him that much at all. She drives off. He escapes, and then kind of ends up just meeting her again as he's on the path trying to track down Blofeld. And the whole opening act is, I will agree, it's a little loose, because it's setting up a lot of pieces, but it's basically leading to MI6 no longer wanting James Bond on the Blofeld case, because, quote-unquote, he's been on it for 2 years, which, as a note, is how long the previous movie was from this one, and he's gotten no progress. So he eventually convinces him to send him on a mission to act as a historical researcher to prove a claim that Blofeld has that he's actually royalty. And he goes in undercover to be this guy and goes to Blofeld's Swiss military base. And he discovers that Blofeld is actually hypnotizing women there to use as secret agents to distribute a virus that will kill all life on the planet unless you have the antidote that Blofeld is selling. And then Bond and Blofeld fight, and at the same time, that woman he met, Tracy, he slowly falls in love with. And by the end, he's defeated Blofeld and has fallen in love with the woman and marries her. And then, spoiler for a 50-year-old movie, She dies, yeah. And everyone's very sad.
That's, yeah, that about sums it up, right there, give or take.
That's
the
summary of it. Like, that's it. It's not a tight movie. You are right. It's 2 hours and 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. But it has a lot of story to tell, far more than mm-hmm. the likes of, like, From Russia with Love or You Only Live Twice or anything. This is a very directed movie that is covering a lot. And there's espionage and other things going on in it. But it's not the same kind of movie as we had just gotten from Connery.
Yeah, and I think that's what, like, this was not as action front, I think, as some of the last few Connerys were to me. It was a lot of exposition. There was a lot of development between Blofeld and Bond. But I think that's, like, kind of good in a way, because so much in these other movies, you know, we get 5 minutes of the big bad on screen only to, like, see his hand or something, you know, and then he's gone and we don't see him again. Like, at least this one, Blofeld was front and center for a lot of the movie. And I did feel like the back and forth between Lazenby and Tenny Savalas was really good. And I thought I like Donald Pleasence as Blofeld, but I think that Salvas did a very, very good job as Blofeld. And I bought him as that kind of a villain. He was just enough, like, suave and creepy at the same time to, like, you know, be sleazy enough to have the influence he would have. And his plan was over the top, as most supervillain plans were.
So, Yeah, it is. But it kind of works. It kind of doesn't. And the way that every Bond villain plan doesn't really work. But it also kind of does. Mm. It at least has some threat to it. It feels like if things don't go a certain way, the villain could, like, actually succeed. It's like what you said in the previous podcast we discussed with Bond. He's doing it for the love of the game.
Yeah.
But I buy it with this version of the character. I buy it with more with Telly Savalas than I ever did with Donald Pleasence's version.
Yeah. And I think that's something that I didn't give this movie enough credit for. Like, as a villain, this Blofeld was quite good.
Mm-hmm. With all that being said, let's go dig deep into this movie and look at some of the finer points of it. At the start, we get a really weird jazzy version, like, on electric harpsichord of the James Bond theme that only shows up in the very initial part of the movie and then never again, and is
thankfully
very confusing. It was bad. Yeah. It was not good at all. But then we get the barrel sequence with Lazenby taking his shot, and he looks far more competent with the gun than Connery did.
It does, yeah. He looks like he might have actually handled one at some point compared to the way, you know. Like, I feel like Sean, like, it's just like a little wobbly here and there in some of those barrel shots. But Lazenby did a good job.
Connery goes for his gun and then does, like, the widest swing of his arm. And you're like, you'd be shot three times by the time you get yours lined up, dude.
Yeah.
Oh, my
good
God.
Good thing your opponent is always Spectre. They're so confident.
The most ineffective guys that have ever been in the secret agent game. Yeah. Wow. So this movie feels very different for a whole stretch of it. Up until we get to, like, the skiing sequence, the movie does not rely on rear projection or green screening at all. It's all filmed on location with gorgeous cinematography from Michael Reed. It looks really, really pretty.
It's good. The coloring and, you know, the set pieces and just, you know, it felt really good. You're right. Like, that was very well done. It was a nicely shot movie. And then we did get quite a bit of the green screen kind of goofiness at the end. But skiing. I mean, that's what you had in the time. Yeah, the skiing, the bobsledding.
It was silly at that point.
Yeah, it was, but it was still fun. It was still fun, and I was like, okay, you can only go so far with what you got when you're trying to shoot to keep the actors safe, so I get it. But interesting choice with the fight scene, though, on a fucking bobsled. That was kind of interesting.
That, I will say, that was, like, that got me a little out of the movie. I'm like, this is starting to get kind of ridiculous, guys. This is no longer, like, a sedate kind of secret age movie. This is now a Bond movie, and you can tell that the factions were warring on that.
The third act feels very much like the Bond we've been used to seeing. There was some real over-the-topness right there. Like,
going along with cinematography, also we have Lazenby himself, who seems far more active and engaged in this movie and the stunts and the performance and everything else than Connery was in his last couple of films.
Yeah, agreed. He did not come just collecting a paycheck. No. He bought into who this Bond was. He, whether you like this version of Bond or not, like, I cannot see Connery playing this version of Bond. Mm-mm. Like, Lazenby did something quite unique here, so I gotta give him credit for that.
There's this whole discussion among fans of Bond as well as Doctor Who, because both of them have long-running franchises that will regularly refresh the lead actor for different reasons, but they will do it. And each time it does, it starts a new era, and you get a new commentary about whether or not they figure out the role and how long it takes. Like, when the Ninth Doctor came in, it was hard for people to see whether or not Chris Eccleston was immediately going to get it, but he did. Other times, mm-hmm. like previous ones from the earlier eras, it was a struggle for the Doctor to figure out themselves in the first couple roles. So, like, when you have an actor like Lazenby, who probably would have grown further into the role, sure, but he does nail it in his one and only time being Bond. It is kind of sad to think that we didn't get more of him.
Honestly, yeah. Like, I would have liked to have seen what else he could have done with this particular version of James. Like, for sure. You know, say what you want. It was not a typical Bond, but it was an interesting Bond. Like, and to your point, we've gotten many different kind of versions of Bond over the years. You know, they do always seem to come back to like one central theme, though, but this one did feel different. Respect that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As he's wandering around through his movie, he does comment at one point, the girl runs off from him and he's like, this never happened to the other fellow, which makes you think he knows he's not the same Bond and he's breaking the fourth wall. So it sets up this idea that Bond is a code name that's reassigned to agents when they take over the role. Even if at other times during the movie, they're then treating him like he's the same old Bond, not a new guy. It's a little confusing.
It is, yeah. But that kind of, there's always like, you know, that lore of, you know, Bond being exactly this, you know, being a code name instead of like who the person is. And this kind of gives you that little like, you know, shoulder flick kind of head nod right there to the fans, which I kind of respected and thought was pretty cool.
Yep. He's a different man around women, too. He tries to save Tracy at the start of the film. She turns out to be basically our maimed Bond girl. Nothing doesn't sleep with other women, but he's not committed to her until that point. And it's all part of the disguise that he's put on, so you kind of let it go. But he's never, like, he never manhandles them. He's never outwardly awful to them the way that Connery was. He doesn't force himself upon anyone. And, in fact, Tracy's the one that uses him at the start of the movie.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so. And even like when they're at the Swiss Alps resort, like, you know, the one girl like writing her room number on his leg and everything, and she was the one kind of coming on to him more. Yep. He was trying to be like, but you know, she was like, no, come to my room and do things to me. So here's my room number written in, you know, lipstick on your thigh. Little things like that in the movie where like it gave it some extra charm, I think, that I didn't. That would have maybe seemed quirky or goofy if it was a Connery version, because this movie took itself a little more seriously.
Yep, it did. And speaking of, like, he shows himself to be a much better secret agent than Connery was. He gets into character, he pretends to be someone else, he does espionage at a dude's office. When he's meeting up with a criminal mastermind who ends up being Tracy's father, he knows the names and history and everything of all the major players in a territory he's in. Like, he is as far from Connery Bond as he is from, like, Archer or something. Like, he's actually a secret agent. Yeah.
Yeah, he does. And he has, like, you know, at the end, he has, like, you know, the camera that, like, you know, you see, like, you know, the microfilm camera and stuff like that. He felt very, you know, espionage and spy compared to just, like, an action hero, action star, like some of what Connery was. You know, Connery was more of, like, you know, a policeman getting into hijinks as you know, a government officer. Lazenby kind of felt, I think, to your point, like a spy, like he was into espionage and was playing this as a code name more so than as a character. So it was definitely, the more I watched, the more I appreciated this movie. Like, as I messaged you as I was watching it, I was like, dude, I'm bored to tears, man. And you're like, oh, I like this movie. I'm like, I'm gonna keep going, but I'm bored to tears. And then it got better, and I was impressed with that.
The thought that James would have been this great spy and then leave the Secret Service, which they hinted at the end of this movie, which if they had decided to kill Tracy off here, they were probably going to do at the start of the next movie, and to use it as a way to drag him back in. Mm-hmm. It's interesting, because at that point, they have to build Tracy up as someone that you're going to see as his equal. So if he's a really good spy, she's a really good Bond girl. And the two of them bounce off each other and help each other and work together. And, I mean, she's played by Diana Rigg, who is fantastic.
She was great. Absolutely fantastic in this role. She did a really good job. And, you know, I bought her as a character, too. Like, you so often get that Bond girl that you're like, oh, yep, there she is. Like, you expected, like, okay, this is the star, she's gonna end up being the Bond girl, but how's the dynamic gonna be? She grew on him and he grew on her, to your point. Like,
They built it.
and the back, they built it together, and like this felt like it could have been a Bond origin story, which we kind of get in some other media and formats throughout the years. But like, you know, at the ending, how his one true love is taken from him, and that leads him to be the man he is nowadays and stuff like that. Like, to your point, you have to buy the girl, and she did, and they picked the right actress, and it was done right. This movie got better as they got more chemistry together.
There is a thought among Bond fans and like those that really love the series that the Daniel Craig era is kind of a riff on Her Majesty's Secret Service.
I could see that
Especially with,
100%.
yeah, the Bond girl that he loves at the start dying and that motivating him to do further actions down the road. Like those first couple movies, especially Casino Royale and Quantum of Solace, feel like what On Her Majesty's Secret Service and a follow-up could have been.
Exactly. Yep. And that's what I'm saying. That's what it felt like. And this felt like it did it, you know, 50 years before Daniel Craig's one. And then Daniel Craig kind of like, we're gonna get this right at the end too, and kind of give, you know, almost Lazenby a finish here, like in what his ending of his story could have been. And you know, it was a really good back and forth between the two of them. And like, you know, just shout out to Spectre doing Spectre things. You know, he was gonna retire. You were never gonna have to see him again. And then you killed his girl, and then that was it.
Now he's in it.
Now you're done.
Amusingly, on the subject of Spectre, though, I do find it funny that, assuming this is the same Blofeld and the same Bond, these two came face to face in You Only Live Twice. And then Bond is at the Institute, and Blofeld, for the longest time, seems to not recognize him at all. And Bond doesn't really recognize Blofeld. And we're sitting there going, is this a sequel? Is this a reboot? Where are we at on this timeline? It's a little weird.
Yeah, cue the Spider-Man meme of everybody pointing at each other, right? Like, it was like kind of like that. But that the cat and mouse between the two of them, like it could have. And again, like maybe this movie kept growing on me. Damn you, the back and forth, like if Connery and someone else, it would have felt campy. I think I would have laughed more at like their back and forth than this. Like, this felt like they were really playing a chess match, and I was like, damn, this movie just keeps getting better, and I'm annoyed at that.
No, I like we're into the really good meat of the movie when he's like working with the women and they're throwing themselves at him and he goes along with it, but then when they're not like looking, he seems really bored at the having to deal with these women when all he wants to do is get on with his secret agent work.
It's he wasn't the womanizing player that like we know Bond to be. Like he almost, you know, came off as not liking women at certain points, and I was like very interested in that. I'm like, what an interesting take on Bond. But like, as an agent, to get him to lead to where he was, like once you start buying into this as, like you said, like an origin story, like it started to make a lot more sense.
Well, and
And I think this location in the hierarchy of the franchise release of movies, just it's probably what threw it off for some people.
I like the idea that he's bored by having to do these things. Like the women throw themselves at him, so he has to have sex with them just to continue that backstory that he's pretending to use. But like Connery always seemed to enjoy it and was encouraging it. But his Bond is like, I'm going through with this because that's the mission. But if they'd stop throwing themselves at me, I'd be perfectly okay with it.
Who are you? Like, literally, he was like, you know, like my mom said I shouldn't kiss on the first date kind of guy or something like that. It was very interesting.
I did like that the dirty jokes that the women got away with and that he got away with. Like, they're playing with his leg and they're like, are you okay? And he goes, just a slight stiffness coming on. And it's like, oh, Bond. And then later, like, one of them slips off this kilt and they're like, it is true. And like that's a dirty joke you only get if you know what's supposed to be under a kilt. Like this movie
My
was,
gosh, that was funny.
in a way that like Pussy Galore even couldn't hint at, this was a dirty movie.
It was. It really was. Like, you know, the name Pussy Galore sounds dirty and raunchy, whatever, as a Bond girl. But like this movie, like, made you almost feel like it was Pussy Galore in the whole movie. You're so right. Like once it hit the Alps scene is when it really started taking off after that first hour, and I was like, damn, this movie is getting pretty good. And you know, you felt like he also was invested on in the girl's safeties in a way. He wasn't just like, you know, there to get what he wanted from them. Like he wanted to like help them at the end, which, you know, was cool to see from a Bond as well, honestly.
Also cool to see was the fact that when Tracy gets captured by Blofeld and held at the military base, she rescues herself. Like, yeah, she does it just as everyone's coming to rescue her, but she's a self-rescuing Bond girl, which you never see.
Yeah, so it's a shame that she's taken from us there, because, like, you could have seen, like, some real, maybe Mr. and Mrs. Smith kind of action between these two.
Love that. That would have been great.
Yeah, it would have been fun, right? Yep. She wasn't helpless. She was not helpless throughout the whole movie. She held her own, and that was an impressive thing for a Bond girl. You know, we got strong Bond women later on. Eventually, we got there, but she kind of laid the groundwork here, and, like, you know, it was impressive to see. You went from, like, the bimbo with the boobs to someone that had some substance, and I could appreciate that.
Yeah, I think I could have seen her growing into a character like Michelle Yeoh's character from the later era, who's like a secret agent that can fight on her own and handle herself better than even Bond can.
Yeah.
Diana Rigg played an Avenger back in the 1960s series. Like, she could have played a super spy opposite him, and that would have been fantastic. And instead, they kill her, which is just really fucking sad.
It's a choice, I guess. Whatever.
It was. But then I have to question that the film, immediately after she dies, plays the jazzy James Bond theme, and you're like, this is not the moment for something upbeat, you know?
The movie, like, you're killing me right now. The movie ends, and I'm like, I'm looking, I'm like, how much time's left? I'm like, there's only 46. I'm like, was I supposed to feel something there? Because now I'm just confused.
Yeah, it was a massive tonal change, like they didn't know what they were doing with the credits, and it was just bad.
Yeah, I mean, like, we've joked a little bit about this in the reviews. Like, they didn't know what to do with the music. When James is walking into, like, a room or something, just play the theme. And, like, they gotten better with the music. But at the end, it was like, this is when they, like, get to the end. They're like, what do we do? I don't know. Hit the fucking theme song. what a place to crescendo to right after a moment, right? Like, Jesus.
I know. So, I mean, I can see what you're saying, that the movie's a little slow to start, but I think that's best viewed if you're seeing this as its own movie, and I think they kind of had to do that, because they needed to establish him as his own person and not just a continuation of Connery. So, it might have bored people a little bit at the time, but once you're in the theater, you're not gonna leave, and I think this movie builds really well. I think the knocks against it is really the fact that Lazenby left. People really hate Lazenby. He had a chance to play Bond for a few films. He left after one because his agent said it'd be better for his career, which, spoiler, it wasn't. But it's this thing where, like, I think the fans are upset with him because he left and they didn't get a full thing. Maybe it's because he wasn't Connery. There's a whole blend of stuff there, but whatever the case it is, he's an oddity in the entire franchise.
And say what you will, like, there's a lot of things, you know, like you said, the franchise feels about him and the fan base and all that, but, like, he didn't phone it in when he did the role, at least. And I think if true Bond fans go back and try to watch this again, like I did, for, and not saying, like, I'm the authority on fucking James Bond or anything, but, like, I didn't hold this movie in very high regard. And for the first third of this movie, I felt vindicated. And then at the end, I was like, damn, that was a pretty good movie. And would have been interesting to see what this version of Bond could have done moving forward. Mm-hmm. And we did kind of get that with the Daniel Craig version later on down the line.
Yeah, because it has that same, like, okay, now Daniel Craig's movie opens with, like, a real powerful action sequence, but then it does slow itself down and focuses on its espionage and everything before it gets to your Bond girl and gets that love story building and everything with it. And at that point, like, it picks up and becomes something else. It does feel like they're templating off of this movie to do their own thing. And I mean, I think if they're gonna template off of any movie, it's got to be either this or Goldfinger, and I kind of like that they did this one.
I do too. Like, I think this gave us, you know, the whole Craig run, that version of Bond is like what Lazenby's Bond could have maybe been. And I feel like that is actually interesting. Like, I feel that everybody would reference James Bond with the Daniel Craig one as the origin story because of, like, how things went down in Casino Royale and, you know, Quantum of Solace and so on. But, like, to your point, like, you could feel the references, and Casino Royale was remade, you know, a couple different times, but, like, you could feel the references to On Her Majesty's Secret Service in Casino Royale, especially with the dynamic between the girl and James. This movie deserves a little more respect, I think, than most of the Bond fan base gives it, and I was surprised to eat my own words a little bit.
I'm happy I wasn't completely wrong. Yay!
I was surprised how much I enjoyed this at the end. Like, it was boring as shit for about an hour, and then the last 90 minutes, which feels really weird to say, you know, for a movie made in 1969, you know, that you're an hour in, it was almost like a Tarantino fucking movie or something for a minute there, but it was good, and the story was good, the relationship between the characters were good, and Blofeld was good, and you got a lot of Blofeld in this, and that's something that we hadn't gotten yet.
Yep. Oh, well, next time we get to go back to Connery for Diamonds Are Forever, and then Roger Moore, and it feels like we're in the real low point to this franchise at that point.
Yeah, this is where it takes a bit of a downturn, the dark days of Bond. You know, this standalone as itself is a good Bond film. Put this in the timeline of how we've gotten them, I see why this one is kind of frowned upon, but I don't think that's truly warranted at the end of the day.
Yeah, this feels more like how if this had just been done by a different studio with their own license to do Bond, this would have been its own thing, and maybe like fans would still hate it, but it would at least wouldn't stand out like a sore thumb, because you then switch back to Connery and get a very Connery style movie again after it does stand out, and it feels weird.
It does feel weird in the time, the chronologicalness of like how you're looking at Bond or whatever, but as its own movie it does a fine job, and it should be looked at that way. I think, you know, it should be its own little thing, and that's fine. I'm good with that.
I'm happy. This has been Not So Live from Asteroid G, actually appreciating the Secret Service that is for Her Majesty that we're on. I'm your host, Mike Finkelstein.
Your buddy, Mike the Ghoul, going to go get dinner ready because he's tired of eating his words. But, you know, this was a good movie. I got to shout it out to you. It was pretty good at the end.
We can both hate the next Connery together. It'll be okay.
Yeah. We'll be right back to sourpuss and bullshit in about a week.
We will see you all next time.